Up next, Pulitzer Prize-winning writer William Kennedy discusses his latest novel, Chongo's Beads and Two-Tone Shoes, which is set in Cuba, and this will come as no surprise, also in Albany. And then later on, Jean Darst describes how her father's quest to write the great American novel defined her family. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. We're also available as a podcast, and you can find me on Facebook and Twitter.
WNYC is supported by Credit Suisse, global sponsor of the New York Philharmonic. Credit Suisse welcomes the 2011-2012 season led by Alan Gilbert, the first native New Yorker to be music director of the Philharmonic. More at credit-suisse.com/lesamis. Producers Distribution Agency presenting The Way, starring Martin Sheen, about a father's life-changing experience walking the Camino de Santiago across Spain to honor his son's memory. In theaters Friday. Info at theway-themovie.com. Other Desert Cities, starring Stockard Channing, Rachel Griffiths, Stacey Keach, Judith Light, and Thomas Sadowski. A family comedy drama where secrets are currency and everyone is rich. Tickets are available at telecharge.com.
Albany may not be the most impressive state capital in the United States, but William Kennedy has called it the universal city of imagination, and he's made it the primary setting for most of his writing. His latest addition to his Albany cycle, the eighth book in the series, is called Chongo's Beads and Two-Tone Shoes. It's published by Viking. It's being hailed by critics as Mr. Kennedy's most political, emotional, and musical work, and I'm pleased that it has brought William Kennedy back to our show today. Hello.
How are you, Leonard? Very glad to be back with you.
Isn't Chongo a god in the Afro-Cuban Santeria religion?
Yes, he is. He's a warrior god. He's the most popular of the gods, the orishas, the sort of demigods.
Spirits.
Like saints. There's no exact equivalent, but he's somebody I came across a long time ago, and... never forgot.
Well, there are, I can't imagine there are many people practicing Santeria in Albany.
Well, you never know. I'm sure we got a lot of Cubans up there. And so all you have to do is scratch a Cuban and you'll find Santeria.
So can you explain the myth of Chongo and Oba?
Chongo and Oba, yeah. She was the one who was his wife. And she... didn't have anything to feed him, and so she cut off her ear and cooked it and served it to him, and he ate it, and then he saw that she had been hiding her disfiguration under her hair, and he said he was very disappointed in her, that he could not stay with a disfigured woman, and so he left her, and she cried so much that she created a river, and... that's one of the myths of Oba. And,
but how does that relate to your intentions here?
Well, you never know what my intentions are. The whole Santeria religion is as a result of my main character, my main male character, Daniel Quinn, who is the narrator, more or less, of this novel. And he meets up with Renata Suarez Otero, and she's a practitioner of Santeria. And she explains all these people to him, and he listens to her lecture at the museum about the art museum about the Orishas, and he gets taken with it, and so he gets pulled into. Her life and her beliefs, and he falls in love with her immediately, and decides to he proposes almost as soon as he meets her, and so they have a kind of a whirlwind courtship as a result of getting involved in a very bloody attack on the presidential palace in Havana in March 1957, and she's involved with one of the revolutionaries who try to kill the president for Encio Batista, and Quinn gets drawn into her life, saving her from arrest and so on, and they become quasi-fugitives.
Now, he is the grandson of the narrator of one of your previous novels, Quinn's book, also
That's right.
Named Daniel Quinn.
Right.
So, and you've incorporated several generations of different families throughout your works. What happens? You've come up with it. They always make comparisons between you and Faulkner and Yocna Potoffa County, Albany being your version of that. And Faulkner also loved to write books about different generations of the same family.
Well, Faulkner was certainly an inspiration for me. When I was writing my first novel, I was reading very assiduously this book that I didn't quite understand at that time, The Sound and the Fury, one of the great books of American literature of the 20th century. And and I did know, I was reading his short stories also, and when you begin to read the novels intermixed with the stories, and Absalom, and Sound and the Fury, you find the Compsons, and then the Sardarises, and then the Snopeses, and all of that. And that was a magical thing for me, and it was, as it was when I was reading Joyce, and, you know, the names and the Dubliners and turn up in and Ulysses. Mm-hmm. And so I... And Salinger, you know, the Glass family. There's something very magical about encountering the somebody you met in a previous novel in a new story and in a new context. And that was just in the back of my mind, and I had no real intention. I was as far, I mean, Faulkner's achievement was almost finished at that time. He still wrote a few more books, But all those major interconnections had already been established, and it just got to me so deeply.
None of those writers appear in this book, but Ernest Hemingway does, because right. Quinn goes to Havana, and Hemingway spent a lot of time there, and he gives him some writing advice.
Yeah, all right. He says, avoid adverbs strenuously, and Quinn has taken him seriously about simple declarative sentences and so on. Although by the end of the book, he knows that simple declarative sentences are an illusion.
He says simple declarative sentence, yes, is an illusion. What does that mean?
Well, it means that life is a little more complex than that, uh-huh. You know, as he well understands by the end of the book.
Did you meet Hemingway?
I met Hemingway in all of his books throughout my adolescence and my early years as a writer, and I meet him every day, more or less.
But you did know Saul Bellow.
I almost met him in Miami when I was working on the Miami Herald, and I got a call that he was in town in a bar up in North Miami, and I asked my city editor if I could go up and, you know, check him out, and my city editor said, no, I'm sick of Hemingway, forget about it.
You know? That was a silly decision on his part.
Well, we had just had a lot of stories, a very big story about him and pictures and everything by one of my fellow reporters down there who knew Hemingway and went fishing with him and then wrote a big story on him. And so it was silly for him to, you know, turn down a Hemingway story, but... Anyway, I called up to try and find Hemingway, and of course the bar room told me that he wasn't there, and they never heard of such a person.
This novel deals with Daniel Quinn's life and evolution as a writer in two eras. First, as a young adult in Havana, documenting Castro's takeover, and then his later life back home in 1960s Albany. Do you see these two as connected in any way? And the part of the Albany story relates to the aftermath of the assassination of Bobby Kennedy.
Yeah, well, of course, these are two revolutions. And I happen to be involved with both of them in some way, tangentially so in Havana and directly so in Albany.
As a reporter?
As a reporter on the Herald in 1957. And I went back... in 1963 to Albany to live and got a part-time job in my old newspaper, the Times Union, and I almost immediately was thrown into writing about the poverty program, and then got into the slums and black life, and the whole civil rights movement was exploding in those years, and I stayed with it and on through 68 or 69 and 70, almost 70 maybe, And they were both tremendously influential years on me in terms of being probably the most fascinating things I wrote about in my whole career, and as a journalist, and so they, you know, stuck in my imagination, and eventually I transformed them into these events and characters and paired them off. I mean, there's a lot of common ground, and racially, the Cuban Revolution, of course, it's been going on since in the middle of the 19th century, is always racial and anti-slavery and so on. And so, of course, with the Civil Rights Movement and back to slavery.
My guest is William Kennedy, who has been writing about Albany in a cycle of novels, and that includes Legs, Billy Phelan's Greatest Game, Ironweed, which won the Pulitzer Prize and the National Book Critics Circle Award, Quinn's book, Very Old Bones, The Flaming Corsage, and Roscoe. And his latest is Chongo's Beads and Two Tone Shoes. It's published by Viking. You've been writing about political corruption, the mob, and prejudice. I guess all of that growing out of your experiences as a journalist.
Yeah, my observation as well, throughout my life. But the mob was the low-level mob of Albany was part of what I grew up with, and they weren't really mobsters. They were just sort of gamblers and low-level hoodlums. But then I got involved when I became a reporter with the history of the mobsters who were around Albany, and that really galvanized my imagination. Dutch Schultz and Vincent Cole and Mad Dog Hall and then Legs Diamond above all. And I just, like, when I began to research Legs Diamond, who was killed in Albany, he was such an extraordinarily popular figure in the press, like a rock star would be today, but he was a genuine celebrity, and he was around and about Albany, and I was going to use him in a novel, but he took over the novel, and I wrote Legs back and published it in 1975.
Well, I'm sure at that time not thinking that you're going to write a lot of books about Albany.
I hadn't thought that in those days.
If you'd set your books in New York City, would politics be as much a driving force in your work?
I'm sure they would. You know, what a great town New York is, but our mayor... Former mayor who was 11 terms in office, unbeatable from 1942 till he died in 1983, Erastus Corning. He used to say that Albany was the second most political town in the United States after Washington, D.C. and it's not far from the truth. I mean, look at all the governors who gone on to higher office, like Teddy Roosevelt and Grover Cleveland and Franklin Roosevelt and Nelson Rockefeller and Mario Cuomo, and now Andrew is being talked of for the White House.
On the other hand, Ed Koch said that he didn't want to run for governor because Albany doesn't have any decent Chinese restaurants.
Oh, he didn't know what he was talking about. He was just talking to
himself. There are good ones?
There is plenty. There's a great Chinese restaurant in Albany, sure. I mean, there's all sorts of great restaurants in Albany. I mean, it's one of the great places to eat. It's for a small city. It's got terrific. You can't do them all in a week.
This book is full of music, from Bing Crosby to the Afro-Cuban drums of the Santeros, R&B, and your language is quite musical, not Hemingway-esque at all. Do you listen to music when you're writing?
No, I can't listen to anything when I'm writing. It just takes me over, so I just try to have silence, and this is very difficult in my house. Because it's like Grand Central Station or Penn Station.
Why are people noise, in and out all the time?
Because that's the way it is in my house. I've got seven grandchildren, and they all seem to be, they come visit me in a parade, no matter when I get into the office. They arrive. So the phone never stops ringing. But anyway, I don't listen to music, but I do listen to music all the time, and especially lately, I've been listening to, again, to Bing Crosby and the Mills Brothers. Somebody just gave me all the records they made together in 1931 to 1933, and especially mostly the Mills Brothers, but they made quite a few with Bing. And I knew those records, some of those records, since 1940s when I first got a phonograph. And that one of their records, Shine, was a motivating force for writing this book. I just kept figuring, how am I going to put this song into a novel? And I figured it out.
Well, so what started it? It wasn't the song Shine.
Shine.
A book starts with some kind of a phrase or an image.
What started the book? Yeah. What started me with Shine? I don't know what you're asking.
Well, what started you with started the book? Was it Shine?
No, not exactly. It was the residual experience that had been so strong in my imagination for a long time, the civil rights movement and Cuba. And I wanted to figure out how to do it, and I started mostly with Cuba, but I also, a lot of this book represents some elements of my father's life when he was senile, and he lived with me the last 5 years of his life, and we were close friends.
So there's a biographical element.
There is somewhat, yeah. I mean, some of my journalistic experience gets transferred into this, and so does my father's, but everybody in the book has been reinvented widely. I mean, it's just no one-for-ones in this book. Or any of the books.
William Kennedy will be giving a reading and signing books tonight at 7 o'clock at the Union Square Barnes & Noble store. You would do quite well to stop by and say hello. The book we're talking about is Chongo's Beads and Two-Tone Shoes. It is published by Viking. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Okay. Thank you very much for having me on.